As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer. Now, Gab Marcotti is away enjoying his Easter weekend, but we are here dutifully reporting on a big weekend of Premier League action. And with me in the studio from The Times, it is Gary Jacob and also Alan Smith. And down the line, we welcome Paul Hurst. Later on, we'll be looking at the race for the top four, which it seems nobody wants to win. But we start with a look ahead to the Manchester Derby following a horrendous afternoon for United at Goodison Park. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side were beaten 4-0 by Everton on Sunday. When asked after the game if the players cared enough, Solskjaer said he didn't know. Alan, you were there. What did you make of what you saw?
It was disgraceful. Some Manchester United players just didn't care once they fell behind to the Richarlison goal, which, you know, was excellent. We should also make a point that Everton were really, really good. But ultimately, there were certain United players who just did not care. Several of them were quite happy to just walk around, not really get involved. And, you know, Solskjaer sort of saying, I don't know if they care. I think he does, because he was asked this question about, you know, the reaction in the dressing room and what, you know, can they come out fighting against City on Wednesday night? And he said, I don't know, but I have asked them. They've given me an answer, but I won't give you the answer that they've given me. You'll need to ask them yourselves. Which sort of, you know, reading between the lines suggests that he knows there are some people in that squad who just, you know, don't care, don't appreciate that they're playing for this club, as he likes to kind of throw in at every press conference. So, you know, it was just probably the worst performance since Ferguson retired, I reckon.
That bad?
Yeah. There were a couple of people who sort of tweeted me saying, oh, you know, it's not even the worst performance this season, because, you know, the 3-1 defeat away to West Ham was dreadful, but, you know, scored in that game. There were certain points where they put together some coherent passages, and yesterday it was nothing. It was 86th minute before they had shot on target, and only attempt, you know, Jordan Pickford, easy save for him to make, and, you know, that was it. There was nothing else on show.
Well, Gary Neville gave a passionate criticism of what he called a rancid United performance, highlighting their lack of work rate and seeming to suggest there were bad influences in that side. Paul, who do you think he was talking about?
Well, I thought it was interesting. He didn't name names. He said he was going to keep his counsel for another week, didn't he? So I can bet after next Sunday's match, if United don't beat Chelsea, if they don't beat City, Gary Neville will probably, you know, have a really, really good rant. It'll probably make for quite good viewing. But just watching that team, you can see yesterday that he's probably on about people like Pogba, like Anthony Martial, who never seems to be, you know, happy on the pitch or kind of motivated at all. Nemanja Matic, the way he let Gylfi Sigurdsson go for the second goal was just criminal, really. He was so lethargic in his attitude. So those are the main players. I just think there are signs that bad habits are sort of creeping into the team recently. You know, they're not running as much as they used to. Like, Everton ran 4 kilometres more than United in the first half alone yesterday, and that's just not acceptable. You know, they need to improve a lot, because otherwise they could get a real hiding against City on Wednesday.
Gary, do you agree with those players that Paul's suggested are the problem?
Yeah, but probably I'd probably include some of the defenders in it generally. I look at sort of some of the players in that team have been there since Ferguson, and I'm not sure they were good enough then. And it felt earlier this season was a much bigger job, and I think a lot of people seem to get carried away in what Shalska had done early on. And I mean, it's a shame because people like Marshall could be such an amazing talent, and it's a pity, as Paul said, he's not sort of he doesn't look happy, because when he's firing and Rashford's firing and Pogba's firing, you feel like it's such an impressive team. But it feels like a really big summer for them, regardless of whether they make the Champions League or not. I know people obviously debate whether they should have given Shaftesbury a job, whether it was too early, but that's done now. You've just got to accept that they obviously need to kind of decide what they're going to do. So who's going to go, who's going to stay, and make those decisions quickly. If they were going to stick with Shaftesbury, they need to sit for a few years to kind of at least give him a few transfer windows to weed out what he needs to weed out. Same as Pochettino had, and same as Emery will need, just to kind of give them the time to weed out, because you can't do it in one transfer window. It's not physically possible.
Another player who has come in for criticism is David De Gea. United have now conceded more goals this season than in any previous Premier League campaign. Alan, how much of that is on him?
I don't think he's been as sort of best in recent weeks, but you need to factor in that the defenders in front of him just haven't performed. It's 11 games now without a clean sheet. The last clean sheet was at Liverpool, scoreless draw in late February. Yesterday, it's tricky. Some of the goals, you couldn't really fault him. I think maybe he could have done a little bit better for the second. Like Sigurdsson's finish was kind of, pretty well placed in the corner, but it is from long range, and he could argue that he should be getting across to save it. There was also that sort of corner from Sigurdsson, I think it was 3-0, this kind of really amazing in-swinging corner which almost crept in at the near post, and De Gea got across, and I'm sure it looked really good in that he kind of volleyed the ball off the line with his right foot, but initially he seemed distracted. He was sort of like watching the players kind of in front of him lined up in the 6-yard box rather than waiting for the ball to come in. So you could argue, if you're kind of being a little bit harsh, that he should be more alert to those situations, even though he made a save. But again, you need to sort of lay a lot of blame at the sort of the feet of these defenders who are making these basic errors. Just even simple things like Solskjaer, most of his press conference after the game yesterday kind of focused on the basics, and how they weren't running, and just a lot of them were unwilling to put their body on the line. You could see from sort of Sigurdsson's goal that the way Matic stepped off and sort of invited him to have a shot, you need to sort of step in there, and you need to at least try and make things difficult for the attacker. So De Gea deserves a little bit of the blame, but just to reiterate, he's playing in front of a back four or a back three in the second half yesterday that just is not performing.
Well, they host City on Wednesday night, who recovered from their Champions League exit by beating Spurs 1-0 on Saturday. Phil Foden with the only goal of the game. They lost Kevin De Bruyne to a hamstring injury. So, Paul, can Foden step up again this week?
If he's picked, he will do, yeah. I think we've, ever since England, the under-17s won the World Cup, the under-17s won the World Cup a couple of years ago, we've been regularly asking Pep every week, pretty much, is he ready? When will he be ready to play in big games, and to start big games? And it's kind of really annoyed Guardiola, because we keep kind of pushing it, and he keeps saying he needs time, etc. But on Saturday he did prove that he's ready to become a regular for this team. If you look at the goal, obviously he only scored from a couple of yards, but his movement to create that space for him to head in was very impressive. He just seems to have got this all-round game intelligence that is very, that you wouldn't expect from an 18-year-old. He picks out the spaces to run into himself, and his passing is very good as well. He's got a great vision on him. So if he is selected, then yeah, I'm sure he'll play well. Obviously, it would be a gamble for Pep. I can sort of see him bringing Fernandinho into the team and David Silva instead, to be honest. But we definitely saw on Saturday that he's ready for regular first team football for them.
Well, with regards to Manchester United then, Paul, let me ask you, what do you think is United's best team? What's the best team that could possibly get a result against City this week?
I genuinely, I've not, I don't know what their best team is at the moment. I don't think Solskjaer knows what their best team is. I just think they're, you know, the thing is that Solskjaer, he's tinkered with the tactics so much, you think that's got to have some kind of effect on the players as well. He's played, you know, he started off playing 4-3-3, then he went to a diamond, 4-4-2, then he went 4-2-3-1. So that's kind of messed with the, you know, consistency a little bit, I think. I just think for United to be playing at their best, they've got to have Rashford, Lingard and Martial all playing at the top of their game in a front three. I think that's the only way they can do it. But all those three players are out of form at the moment, particularly Martial, who just doesn't seem to be interested whatsoever. So, you know, Ollie's got to find a way of geeing those three up and getting United to hit City on the counter and punish them for them to have, you know, any chance of getting any results.
Alan, let me ask you, from what you saw on Sunday, any positives for United to take from that in terms of any guaranteed starters for the game on Wednesday?
At a stretch, I would say Scott McTominay. You know, at least he sort of showed that he cared, which, you know, is really clutching at straws with that. I mean, beyond that, you could make an argument for the rest of them to be dropped. Obviously, it's impossible for all of them to miss out on Wednesday night, but, you know, McTominay at least showed he cared. Dalot showed sort of, you know, didn't play particularly well, but at least there was, you know, some effort there. Rashford tried, but at the same time, there were, you know, Rashford showed signs of frustration at 1-0 when he had this free kick from about 40 yards, and there was sort of, you know, a bunch of players lined up in the box expecting him to play the ball in, and he decided to shoot, and he shot miles over, which is, you know, just a sort of an interesting kind of snapshot in terms of, maybe it's a case of him, you know, people make the argument that because he's sort of, you know, has grown up with United, maybe he, you know, felt sort of a need to kind of carry the burden or whatever, but such basic poor decision making is kind of, you know, a massive concern, and I really, really can't see a way that they can beat City on Wednesday night, unless City, you know, completely fail to turn up. If City turn up, you know, I really think it's a foregone conclusion.
Well, it's a question that we've been asking for weeks. I'm going to ask all of you. How motivated do you think United will be, knowing if they win, they could obviously hand Liverpool the title? Gary?
Gosh. They should do it for themselves, for their own pride of, A, the result on the weekend, and they still actually got a chance to Champions League football. But, you know, you've seen this down over the years where one club can help another rival by getting a result. And I don't know, do players really take that on board? And, you know, will Shelska really go in the dressing room and say, I don't want you to play because you can hand Liverpool the title? I mean, he's not going to say that. Is that going to be in their heads? You know, I can't imagine that. You know, when they cross that line, it's... they have to play for pride and they have got something to play for. I mean, it's not as if Tottenham, Chelsea and Arsenal are kind of coasting over their line, so there is still something to play for. And if they beat City and they beat Chelsea, then suddenly they have got a chance. You know, so I'm not sure I buy the idea that players can suddenly just switch it off. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, Hersey's probably got a better idea because he covers the club, but I don't think they can just switch it off.
Paul, then let's ask you, what do you think?
I think, just as like Gary says, you know, they can't. They need to win this. They need to get in the top four next season. So I don't think any, you know, the idea of this handing Liverpool the, you know, if they rolled over, it helps City win the title ahead of Liverpool. I don't think that'll enter their minds. You know, they need to win to get themselves in the top four. They need to restore their own pride because it's, you know, it's just embarrassing, humiliating what happened at Everton. So, you know, I don't think the title racing will come into their minds that they need to win to, you know, get their mojo back and at least show some kind of fight. Because, you know, if they don't, if they just wilt on Wednesday night, I can see the, you know, I've got visions of Old Trafford being sort of half empty, but, you know, with 5 minutes to go, something like that. And that's not what any of the players will want.
Alan?
Yeah, I agree. It's about sort of restoring their own pride. Not sure if some of them actually care enough, because if you think of yesterday, you'd sort of expected some sort of reaction in the second half, and it just wasn't there. So in terms of factoring in whether, you know, winning will give Liverpool the title. I don't think that matters. I mean, for most of those players, I doubt many of them have a full appreciation of the rivalry between supporters as well. So, you know, I think it's about going out, showing that they care, and really, in terms of the long-term future, proving to Solskjaer that they, you know, they deserve a place in the squad going forward. Because he also made the point yesterday that he sort of has promised that he will be successful in the future, and there are certain people in that dressing room who won't be part of that. So a lot of those players are now genuinely playing for a place in the squad in terms of next season.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. Outside the top two, it was a bad Saturday and Sunday for sides trying to qualify for the Champions League. United lost, as did Spurs, as did Arsenal, beaten 3-2 at home to Crystal Palace. Chelsea host Burnley on Monday night, but at the time of recording, there are just 3 points separating third from sixth. Gary, let's start with Arsenal. Unai Emery says it's still in their hands. How do you rate their chances?
If they'd won yesterday, I would have thought they would get over the line because they could afford to lose one of the away games. The three away games they've got now, I'm not so sure. I thought he made a terrible misjudgment yesterday with his team selection, and Mustafi cost the team yet again. So it's probably in the balance. The only thing that's probably in their favour is the fact that neither Chelsea or Man United look like they're necessarily going to get over the line without a problem, without their own stumble. So you kind of feel that Tottenham have probably got enough to get over the line. Although if Arsenal won yesterday and Chelsea win tonight, that could have put a few nerves in Tottenham's camp, but I kind of feel Tottenham will get over the line, and then it's whether, in inverted commas, the better team out of Chelsea and Arsenal, neither particularly good really. So I think we were all saying yesterday the game is a very strange selection for his team. You win the game that's in front of you on that day, not the game that's a game away, which he's obviously thinking about his changes in the rotation, and he just got it very badly wrong. Especially against sort of Zaha's pace, and he exposed Jenkinson to that, and exposed Mustafi to that, and it just seemed a really strange decision. He set an anxious mood inside the stadium from the start, from when people saw the teams, and then after about 15 minutes, a couple of set pieces, there wasn't, you know, the mood got even more anxious, and you know, Arsenal's away record is pretty poor, be it they won at Watford last week, helped by the red card, but you know, they just about got over the line there without playing particularly well, and now they've got to really beat Wolves, which maybe might not look as difficult as it did a few months ago after the semi-final. But then they've got Leicester on the weekend on Sunday, and that's going to be quite a difficult game. That's Jamie Vardy. I mean, if there's one club he wants to score against, it's Arsenal. And there's a little bit of bad blood between them going back a few years ago to when Arsenal beat them in the year that Leicester won the title, and that sort of late goal. And it feels like there's a bit of an undercurrent. And, yeah, that's not going to be an easy game for them.
Just quickly on that, does it help their cause, the fact that Manchester United play Chelsea this coming weekend.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, this is obviously going to happen this afternoon. There's no guarantee Chelsea are necessarily going to beat Burnley tonight. You know, I think having seen Chelsea a few times recently, you don't know how they're going to turn up either. So you could even say, do the English clubs even deserve four places in the Champions League? Because the fourth team really is not particularly good. It's still in Arsenal's hands, but they've made the job a lot harder for themselves. And if they don't manage to pick up at least 4 points from Wolves and Leicester, I can't see them getting there.
Do you agree with that, though, Alan? That the Premier League probably shouldn't deserve four teams in the Champions League?
No, I don't agree, because if you look at the progress of the clubs in Europe itself, and you know, you could look and go a bit wider into it and say that, you know, if you're to give another one of, say, you know, one of the other top five leagues in Europe, or say a lesser league, an additional place, hypothetically speaking, you're not going to be, you know, enhancing the Champions League. I think, because if you look at sort of Germany, obviously you've got sort of two teams. Italy, you've basically got one, and then the rest. Spain, you've got two and a half with Atletico. So I think, you know, while this sort of fourth, fifth, and sixth place teams in the Premier League season have, you know, obvious deficiencies and at various points have struggled to differing extents, they're still, you know, a level above most of the competition in Europe.
I would agree with that. I just think they're, it's just a poor standard in that group.
No, it is, but comparatively.
I mean, for Arsenal to get by in Napoli without conceding a goal was quite a poor Arsenal team got to the semi-final last year. So it feels like the Europa League is a really poor competition, which you could win if you're a moderately decent team. And it feels like maybe there aren't that many good teams in Europe, and perhaps as there were in the past, maybe. Maybe there's one per league or one or two per league, and not three or four per league, maybe.
Well, let's get back onto the race for the top four then. Tottenham currently in third. Three of their four remaining games are at home. But do you think, Alan, the Champions League semi-finals could get in the way?
Possibly, but then I also think that Arsenal and Chelsea being in the Europa League semi-finals, you could apply that sort of idea to them as well, especially when, you know, Emery has quite, you know, this quite impressive history with the Europa League. Chelsea, have had a relatively decent sort of draw in terms of their progress to the semi-finals of the Europa League, but, you know, they're at this stage now, they're three games away from, albeit the second tier European competition, but, you know, a decent trophy to win. So I think you could argue that Spurs playing Ajax may distract them from league games, but I think it also applies to Arsenal and Chelsea, and really because Spurs have been, you know, it doesn't necessarily translate in terms of the points total, but I think they have been throughout the season far better than the other three sides. So, you know, I think they're locked in to finish in the top four. In terms of the other position, I'm not too sure yet.
So for you, maybe just one place is up for grabs then?
Yeah, I think fourth position is up for grabs. I would say Spurs, I really do fancy Spurs to sort of nail down third position.
And Gary, I'll ask you both, of the four teams then that are still challenging for the two or one in Alan's case, place left, Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea and Manchester United, who needs to qualify for the Champions League most? You've suggested it should be Arsenal.
Yeah, I think obviously there's the Champions League gives you financial clout, and it also gives you a way of attracting players. And I think if Arsenal have a third season out there, that's quite a big blow. You know, their commercial income doesn't compete with Man United's. Chelsea have got the possibility of selling Hazard to raise money, and probably will, and probably have got other money. And Spurs will probably get back in, and plus they'll have money from the Champions League from this campaign. It just feels like financially Arsenal can't afford that blow. And if Emery wants to rebuild his squad, he's going to need modest money or decent money to kind of do it, as well as getting out the players he wants. And I think you only have to look at Spurs' financial results recently to realise the effect of the Champions League, and you pretty much can add 50, 60, 70 million into your bottom line without many costs. And so it's just the financial effect is massive, really, and Arsenal need to be back in there. You know, from Chelsea's perspective, yeah, I mean, they've obviously also got quite a turbulent summer ahead, but that obviously it's going to be linked into what happens with the transfer ban, and there's a wider thing there about Sarri's future, and, you know, there'll be many Chelsea fans who perhaps almost don't want to get there because they don't want Sarri there. I mean, he's still not really turned over the... He's not really sort of got the fans on his side at all, really. And it feels like he's had a few good results recently and they've quietened down. But it's just... It's waiting to bubble up there again. And I think even if he got there, I don't think there'll be a section of fans who want him there next year because they just feel a little bit bored of the football he plays.
Alan, what do you think then?
Yeah, I agree with Gary in terms of Arsenal. I think Spurs as well, even though I'm pretty confident that they will make it because of the stadium. Like we've mentioned it a few times in the past few weeks that, you know, it is crucial for them to be in the Champions League next season. Chelsea... I mean, you need to factor in as well the sort of situation with Abramovich, which I think is quite interesting in terms of how distant he is. He has become. It'll be quite curious to see what happens over the summer. And in terms of United, I think they, Gary mentioned it a little bit earlier, that, you know, it's going to need, it looks like Solskjaer is going to need more than a couple of transfer windows to really put together, you know, his sort of team. So it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing for them to miss out. Yes, people would argue that, you know, the Europa League is extra challenging because you have to go into that Thursday Sunday cycle, but ultimately, you know, you can coast through a Europa League group while playing the reserves if you get, you know, a kind enough draw. So yeah, I would say Spurs and Arsenal, you know, it matters more for them to finish in the top four.
It's time now for our weekly predictions game, where Gab Marcotti and I pick five matches from the Easter weekend and try to predict the correct score. Now, it's 1 point for a correct result and 3 points for a correct scoreline. And it's fair to say that neither of us foresaw a 4-0 win for Everton against Manchester United. In fact, we both predicted a draw in that one. I correctly predicted a win for Liverpool, while Gab, for some reason, gambled and went for Cardiff to get a draw. He also took a punt on Accrington to draw with the League One leaders Luton, but I was again successful in predicting a Luton victory. But while we both went for a Manchester City win, Gab predicted the correct scoreline of 1-0. So that was 3 points for him, 3-3 overall. So it all came down to Paris on Sunday night. And while Gab took a chance on Monaco getting a draw, I predicted that PSG would win, securing their eighth title. And I've extended my lead to 18-12 for the season. I just wish Gab was here to hear it, although I'm sure he would contest it in some way. But anyway, I lead 18-12. All right, it's time now for some quick hits. Let's start with Newcastle, who are officially safe after a 3-1 victory over Southampton on Saturday evening. Iosi Perez with his first ever hat-trick for the Magpies. Alan, what do you make of Perez's contribution in a Newcastle shirt?
I think initially I was sceptical about Perez as a player in terms of, you know, what does he really offer. But in recent weeks, I think he's really stepped up and, you know, hat-trick obviously was very, very good on Saturday evening. But the most impressive thing I've found is his work rate. He just never seems to stop running. And, you know, he genuinely commits himself to the cause. And, you know, obviously that's something which, you know, supporters love. And I know George Culkin has written in this morning's paper about, you know, Perez' future. And it doesn't seem too certain. But I think he has been a massive asset to Newcastle in recent weeks, and, you know, without him they're a far, far weaker team.
We've mentioned Palace's win at Arsenal. Wilfred Zaha instrumental at the Emirates, and Zaha spoke this weekend about wanting to play on the Champions League stage. Gary, will Palace hold on to him this summer?
He wanted to go last summer and they probably would have accepted a bit if the money had been there, and I think their biggest difficulty is finding anyone who's willing to pay the type of money they want for a player who may not be even guaranteed to be a first-team player at many of the top four teams. So it's really difficult to see which club he could actually go to and which club we're willing to pay £60, £70 million. You know, whether Steve Parrish is willing to take a lower price. I think Tottenham felt last year that maybe if he was 20, 25, 30 million, they would have. But when the price went some ridiculous, they weren't interested. So he's now 26. I think Zaha's feeling it's sort of almost not now or never, but if it's going to happen, a move, it's got to happen in the next year, really. from Palace's perspective, if they lose him and Wan-Bissaka, that's quite a big blow. You can have all that money, but you've got to invest it correctly. Sometimes I think with Zaha, he gets free reign at Palace and everyone overlooks all the things he doesn't do so well because he does other things well, but he won't get that licence at a bigger club. And I think a bigger club, all those little things will come out glaring. I'm generally not sure which bigger club he could actually play for.
Ryan Fraser, another player in demand, was frustrated after Bournemouth lost at home to relegated Fulham, saying they're good one week and a shambles the next. Alan, does this inconsistency reflect badly on Eddie Howe?
I think there's a little bit. They've been hampered quite a bit by injuries, particularly defensive injuries, but even throughout the season before those injuries happened, you really have no idea what to expect from Bournemouth. They look... Some weeks they can look very, very good, and others they, particularly defensively, can look all over the place. So I could kind of understand where Fraser's coming from. They just seem, you know, they're actually really entertaining to watch because of the fact you've no idea what to expect. I think they've really struggled. I know that they lost the Fulham at home at the weekend, but they've really struggled away as well, and particularly against the bigger teams. They just don't seem to be capable of sort of mixing with them, and you know, it's sort of a given if Bournemouth go away to a top six team, there really is only one result. So you know, it'll be an interesting summer for them because they need to strengthen defensively. Obviously Nathan Ake has been, you know, outstanding for two seasons now, and he sort of consistently wins their sort of player of the month award, but around him the rest of that defence just doesn't inspire any confidence.
Brighton still can't score, but they do take a point from Molineux, ending their five-game losing streak to pull 3 points clear of Cardiff and the relegation zone. Gary, will Chris Hughton's men get over the line?
Just, I think, only because they've got a three-point advantage over Cardiff, and Cardiff have probably got two games they can win. They've got Fulham Saturday and they've got Palace, so they can, you know, realistically they might think they can get 6 points. But Brighton have got Newcastle at home, and if they beat them, that's probably going to be enough and they'll stay up on goal difference. But obviously I know Chris Hughton has had some criticism from fans, which seems remarkably unfair given the job he's done and the resources he's got. And sometimes when you see fans doing that, you think back to Alan Kirbishley and Charlton all those years ago when people were saying, well, we should be pushing for Europe as Charlton fans, and you look where they are now, and it's sort of, people don't sort of see what's in front of them and see the negative, not the positive.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information. And we'll be back on Thursday after that Manchester derby and ahead of Manchester United versus Chelsea.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.